Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about G-Event, an event loop for Python. Wait, we already had one of those. No, this one's better. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 238, recorded January 16th, 2013. G-Event. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing to you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, projects you might not have heard of, projects you may be using every day and not knowing it. All those great variety of projects. It's an awesome responsibility for me to do that every week, but an awesome privilege as well, and a really enjoyable one at that. Each week, I am joined by a lovely co-host. Oh, I said that again. I didn't mean to say it that way. Anyway, a wonderful co-host. Let's put it that way. No less this week, it's Dan Lynch. Dan Lynch, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here. I was quite flattered with being described as lovely. It doesn't happen that often, so thank you. I'll take that.
And where are you speaking to us from? I'll ask you that, because I don't normally...
Yeah, I'm in Liverpool in England, which many of you will know, obviously, from the Beatles, as everybody knows. So I don't know any of the Beatles. I get asked that a lot when I go to America and other places. Oh, do you know the Beatles and all this? But I'm afraid I don't, but I am from the same area, same neck of the woods, as we say around here.
Actually, they probably left long before you were born, right?
A long time ago. Well, 1980. I may look older, but 1980, yeah. So the Beatles had well gone by the time I came around.
The Beatles had broken up before you were born.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's a long time ago. Definitely a long time ago. Well,
1970, I think they broke up. Yeah, so 10 years before.
Well, Dan, it's a pleasure having you back on the show, on our second show of this brand new year. We have a really great guest for today. Let me see my notes here. So it's Dennis, I think it's Bilenko. Dennis Bilenko, should be close, something like that. He's going to talk to us about G-Event, which is a Python asynchronous platform or multi-threaded platform. I'm trying to get it from reading through the website. It's a little odd, I think. And it's funny because I started looking at this and I went, oh, wait, we already did one of those. A couple dozen shows ago, we had Twisted On, which was a Python framework to allow multiple threads of operation happening at the same time. I think this is a little bit different, though. I think it's because it uses more low-level C calls and things like that. So we'll have to get him to actually compare it with Twisted somewhere in the show. I'm sure we'll be able to get to that. Have you looked much into this, Dan?
I've been doing some research on it today, actually. Nothing like last-minute research. And I have actually had a look into it. It looks really, really interesting. But I'm curious to know, as I'm sure many people are, I don't want to sound harsh, but why we need another one of these kind of solutions and what it's actually bringing. So it'd be interesting to find out what answers he's got to those kind of questions.
Well, the great thing about frameworks is there's so many of them. I mean, if there's a problem to be solved, there will be a lot of people all sort of addressing the same problem. And, we definitely have the problem in Perl where we have so many different ways of doing templating. And in Python, there's all these different ways of doing some sort of like web framework, like we've had a bunch of them on the show, actually, like Django and things like that. So, I can see, if there's a niche to fill, it's going to be filled in different ways. So it should be pretty interesting to figure out how to do that. I also just want to say before we get into the show and bring Dennis on, special thanks again to my new client, Nami Media, for providing the office space for me to be able to tape the show. I'm on the 13th floor, believe it or not, of the Howard Hughes building. And yes, in fact, this is the building that's adjacent to the promenade where we had the hostage situation last week. And I was unable to come to work on Friday because the police had the building surrounded. So weird. So if you've heard some news out of L.A. from last week where there was a hostage situation, yes, in fact, that was adjacent to this building. So where they were holding some 14 people in a mall. mall, and there was a stabbing and everything. It was really, really tragic. But I hear they caught the guys, so that's good. But anyway, yeah. In fact, for those super curious, I saw a couple people in the chat room ask about that. So, yeah, this in fact is the building that was next to that mall that you might have heard about last Friday in the news. Anyway, enough on that. Anything else before we get started, Dan?
No, I was just going to say, make sure you stay safe. It sounds like an exciting neighborhood that you're in.
West LA is not supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be East LA, and that's the problems. I'm on the West Side. I'm the West Side, dudes. I'm on the West Side. Right. So this should be no problem. I am just north of LAX, and I think that's always considered a bit of a seedy neighborhood, being near the airport like that. But I think I'll be okay. Anyway, so without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Dennis. I think it's Bilenko. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Amsterdam, the Netherlands.
Very cool. I've actually been there, I think about 4 months ago. I did a cruise out of Amsterdam that went up the Rhine River just outside of Amsterdam?
No, I don't think so. I have been living there for a few months just.
Okay, it was some river, I think. I'm pretty sure it was in Amsterdam because I remember it.
I think it's Amstel, not Rhine.
Okay, because I remember all the bike paths, and I remember almost getting run over by hordes of bikes that are trying to go somewhere. But maybe, no, is that right? Maybe I was in a different city. I'm pretty sure it was in Amsterdam, but we'll see. Anyway, so at the beginning of the show, I actually talked about, as much as I was aware of G-Event, or I don't know if you pronounce that as G-Event or G-Event, but I gave sort of the 30,000-foot view level, or I gave sort of like the overview. Can you give us what G-Event is and why, what problem it might solve?
Yeah, sure. So G-Event is an asynchronous framework at the core for Python, like Twisted or Tornado, but with coroutines built on top of that. So you get all the benefits of an asynchronous framework, like an ability to manage tens of thousands of connections without much memory. But you can still write your application in a normal way, like you would if you had only one connection to worry about. So this is called cooperative threading, and G-Event provides these cooperative threads, and they're actually more lightweight than real OS threads. So you can, and it's possible, and people do it, take your multi-threading application written for Python and run it on top of G-Event and have it use less memory and less virtual machines and so on. And one of the nicest things about G-Event is that it can take a library or a framework, web framework like Django or Flask or Redis Py. There's a whole bunch of Python libraries that are not written with an asynchronous framework in mind, but with G-Event you can run them asynchronously. So in short, it's an async framework without complexity and drawbacks associated with callbacks. Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
Okay, so if I'm using this, I'm trying to do multiple things simultaneously, or at least have the appearance of doing them simultaneously. And you said it's more lightweight than like traditional threads that my operating system might provide. Can you explain why that's so?
Because the OS threads currently, they're improving, but they currently are associated with overhead. You have to allocate a few megabytes of stack memory up front. There is switching overhead. And on top of that, if you do multi-threading application, you need to take care of synchronization and stuff. That also adds overhead. With G-Event, what you have is user-level cooperative threads. So what it actually does is does this stack switching capability provided by an extension called GreenLight. I can talk about it later. But sure. What it does is just replaces your stack without any syscalls and without using this big chunk of stack memory allocated in advance. That's the case now that the OS threads have used more resources than they should. It gets improved, and maybe someday they will be like more lightweight, but right now you have coroutines having using less resources than real OS threads.
Now, I understand you're the creator of G-Event, and what problem were you trying to solve when you created it?
I was writing a network application for some time before Python in C++. So at the job about 2008, I had to write another network server in Python, and at the time it was like the choice was to do Twisted, another Python framework that based around callbacks, and Twisted is good, great quality code, but I really looked for a better way than just making this chain of callbacks. And I knew that there is a better way because I've taken a look at Erlang, for instance, which has this microprocessors that you can spawn in huge numbers. So I was wondering if you could do this in Python. And then I found about this libraries called GreenLet and EventLet and also Stackless Python, which is really relevant, but not used directly. And they do exactly what I wanted to. They give you this asynchronous interface on top of the synchronous interface on top of the event loop. Mm-hmm. And it's cooperative lightweight trading. So I get involved with that library with EventLet, started contributing, took over the maintenance at some point, and then I decided to start a new project because I thought I could do better if I start from scratch and get rid of some backwards compatibility issues.
And so you created this library to help you develop these network applications.
That's right. Yeah, I just said that's right.
Yeah, okay. And so what does it look like to me as a programmer as I'm interfacing with GEvent? What's different about the way I would write code for this compared to say just writing traditional linear code?
Pretty much nothing is different. You have to know maybe a few GEvent specific calls, like how to create a new cooperative thread, but it's just one function. Pretty much is the same API as a traditional multi-threading. You have events, queues, you have channels. Excuse me? Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're fine. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yes, so you have a lot of similar primitives that you have in multithreading. They just re-implemented for this cooperative environment. And in fact, what in GEvent you can do is replace Python multithreading primitives with these cooperative ones and have your application unchanged to work with cooperative threads instead of real ones. So yeah, it closely resembles the multithreading applications.
And so if I want to do something that is normally very complex and break it up so that multiple cores, for example, if I have a multi-core machine and I have something that's CPU intensive and I want to try to figure out a way to break it up into like 8 parallel threads or something, how do the different threads talk to each other?
Well, first of all, this is at the core, it's an event loop. It's all driven by the event loop.
Okay.
And so this is for I/O bound application. If you have a CPU intensive task, you need to offload it to thread pool or process pool. You cannot just do it in process because just with any async framework, you will just starve your event loop. So that's the first thing. And what was the question again? So.
How do the different threads communicate with each other? How can I manage, what threads are working on what?
You mean cooperative threads? Because in GEvent, you actually have a thread pool for real threads. If you really have a real CPU intensive task, you can spawn it in a thread pool and get the result back. But with cooperative threads, that depends. You can just spawn a thread and ask for its result back. You can have channel for moving, unlocking the thread based on send and receive primitives. You can have event where multiple threads are subscribed to one. For instance, if you have a chat room and you want everyone to wake up and receive updates, you can use an event, the same as in multi-threading. And you can even have semaphores, although with cooperative multitasking, the switches, the context switches only occur at the points where I/O happens. So in most cases, you can avoid synchronizing the data that you use in your application, which makes it more easier to write and less likely to make mistake.
So with something like this, it's probably more suited then for I/O-driven events, like say a web server or some sort of a chat client or something then.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same scope, the same target as Twisted Node.js and all async frameworks. It just looks like threading, but this is just to make the programmer happier, write linear code instead of callback-based code. So it is for IO-bound application, that's absolutely for sure.
Okay, so I could write something, and I think in Python you call this WSGI. It's sort of the universal interface for web applications so that different frameworks can plug into that. So this would be some way to write something that's above that to actually serve WSGI servers.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, Gevent inclusive with GI, we as GI server, so any web framework, and nowadays it's like all of them, that supports with GI can just run through Gevent and enjoy this scalability of an async framework. Even though these web frameworks were designed with multi-threading in mind and Apache to host.
Okay, well, that sounds really cool. So what's the current state of it? Is this production ready? Are you using this in any large applications?
Yeah, it's used in a number of companies. It's used, Spotify uses it. It's used by a chat service called Omegle, which hosts like 10,000 or 20,000 people chatting online. It's used by even Wikipedia. Has a service for rendering PDFs from page, and it renders like hundreds of thousands of PDFs daily, 100,000 PDFs daily, and that is managed by Gevent. And yeah, lots of companies doing production stuff with it. And the current state is we had version 0 based on libevent, the event loop. Now we have a new version 1.0. based on libv, which is about to be released, and both branches are used in production.
So can you tell us a bit more about libev then? How does that work and how does it relate?
So this is these are the event loops written in C. So you can have wrappers for EPOL, KQ, and timer management written in Python, and that's what Twisted does, for example. But you can also take these libraries that do it in C, and it because it's in C, and uses well the data structures suitable for C, it's much faster. So in G, I'm not interested in writing the event loops. I'm more interested in the coroutine part. So that's why I just picked like the best event loop available, and that was libevent when I started it. And then I switched to libv because, well, it fixed some bugs for me. And in the future, I might even switch to something else, like a Node.js project develops an event loop called libuv, and it also has some nice properties and nice features.
Yeah, and I was looking at Greenlet, which when I was doing some research on Gevent, which is you're actually based on or you're using as part of Gevent. So, how does Greenlet work, and how is it related? I believe it's a spin-off of Stackless Python. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So Stackless Python has quite an old history. It was started in year 2000 by Christian Tismer, and it added a few features to Python. It added microthreads. It added ability to like pause the microthread, switch context, this kind of thing. You could even pause your thread, microthread, pickle it, serialize it, and replay it later. So it has all of these nice features, but unfortunately, and I think it's a big, unfortunate, isn't it? It's not got merged into CPython. So we have these two separate versions of Python. And then Armin Rigo from PyPy project extracted the stack switching functionality from Stackless and packaged it as a just C extension. And what it does is it actually a technique that can be used on not just on Python program, but on any C program, on maybe other C-based interpreters. It literally takes like a pieces of C stack, saves it on the heap, and replaces it with the stack of the coroutine that you are going to switch to. It's called this hard switching to, and it has some assembly code for like the all major platforms to save the registers properly. And it sounds crazy, but it works really nice. in applications, and it gives you like true coroutines, true full stack coroutines that are absolutely necessary to implement the functionality that Gvent provides.
I know a lot of our audience is probably familiar with what a coroutine is, but since you're obviously an expert in this, can you explain a little better about why I might want to have a coroutine?
Well, coroutine first is like a term that contains many different kinds, many different types. There's like classification of coroutines. For example, in Python, there is this yield keyword, which also sometimes called coroutine. And what it does is that the function state, instead of just returning from a function, you pause the state, you save all the local variables, and then you can resume it later. Mm-hmm. But what Greenlet does is it goes even further. It's if it's native Python coroutines, you can just save the top level stack frame, and you need to explicitly manage it with yield. With Greenlet, you can even switch if you go deep down several stack frames, and even if you go into C, because Python is a lot of interaction with C, lots of libraries written in C. Even if you go in C, that also can be switched. Because, well, the way it works, just by taking the stack and saving on the heap. And this is two very different types of coroutines. But in the end, it's like the same. It's the ability to switch and restore context. And if you add event loop to it, which is what Gvent does, you get like a thread-like abstraction, which are driven by the event loop. So instead of saying, I'm reading from the socket, I call this callback when there's some data, you say receive from the socket, and this the whole green thread gets paused until there is some data, and then it gets resumed again with the data passed back to the caller. So it gives you impression of like a blocking regular call, but actually does this switching underneath. So every time you want some blocking operation, there's a dedicated greenlet that just runs the event loop, and that you want some operation to block, you switch to the event loop. And then event loop switches back to your current greenlet, giving you the result of what you wanted for.
So in terms of my coding, I write it like it's a real blocking call. I just say, please read a line from this socket. And it looks to me in this thread like I'm just sitting there waiting for this, even though what's really happened is my whole thread has been swapped out and some other things are running over here based on swapping the entire stack with this technology you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that real OS threads cannot do this with unnecessary performance, but I think it could be. I think the kernel gets improved and the user space libraries gets improved, and maybe at some point in the future the kernel threads will be fast enough to just do this without any of this coroutines and without event loops.
Why don't the standard thread libraries work like this? I it seems like that would be the obvious thing, was to take the stack and drop it into the heap.
I'm not sure, because first of all, the standard libraries solve a much harder problem, right? They are preemptive threads. They want to switch out the thread even if the thread like doing something and not yielding in any way, not doing any I/O. And this kind of threads only switch like if the thread itself decides to give up control. So the task is a bit easier in this case of I/O bound application. That's why you can cheat a little bit and faster syncs.
So this library that are you built on top of Greenlet, or are you just doing something somewhat like Greenlet?
Right now, the current version of Greenlet is built on top. The current version of Gvent is built on top of Greenlet. But I have, in fact, been like experimenting with doing this switching and event loop in C, so that I can have a much better performance and just wrap the resulting C library in Python. Because as I said, well, event loop is in C already, and what Greenlet does is nothing specific to Python. It's just stack switch, and it also works in C, actually. So, yeah, in fact, next version of Gvent might be doing something like Greenlet without actually using Greenlet.
Okay, and I have a question from the chat room. We have a Brent 11 who's asking, is Gvent integration with Django difficult or straightforward?
It should be straightforward, but you should understand that you don't just use Django. You also use something like database driver. And this is where usually people get problems. For instance, if you use Postgres, PsychoPG2 module has like special helper for gevent. So you can just call a specific function and it will use gevent capabilities to switch out. But if you're on MySQL, then you need to make sure that either your driver is Python or you run it through chatpool, because gevent can only turn a synchronous library into asynchronous if it's written in Python. If it's in C, then I cannot get into it, cannot replace the sockets with this cooperative sockets, and you need to use chatpool. So the question is, Django is easily usable with gevent. The question is your database driver. You need to look like what people do. But I know that people use both MySQL and Postgres with gevent, and I myself use Postgres, and I've seen people using MySQL, so it should be fine.
So, in order for this to actually work, you have to basically override or interrupt anything that might be blocking, like a socket call then. And you have to make sure that that's calling back to your code, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a module, helper module in gevent package called gevent.monkey. Well, because what it does is usually called monkey patching. And it has like this, if you have a socket in standard library and you implement a very similar interface with gevent. And in gevent, we actually went to a great length to ensure that our socket is very similar in interface to the standard socket. We actually tested with standard tests. We have lots of tests to make sure that it's, if you switch it with the standard socket, it will be compatible. So what we do is just, Python allows you to do this, go into standard module, replace socket class with our class, and it becomes cooperative. And we do it with threads, the thread become cooperative threads and a few more things that, not all, so you need to watch for some things. For instance, if you do file system and you're on FS, it's currently not patched, so you need to do it through chatpool if you really want it to be asynchronous.
And so how does we had Twisted on the show about 6 months ago. How does this compare with Twisted?
It compares, so the similarities are that both are asynchronous frameworks. Both use EPOL or PyQ. But the differences is that Twisted builds on top of callbacks. So you need to specify, you need to switch your sequence, your action into series of callbacks. So as soon as you got something blocking, you need to say, well, defer it, add callback, add airbag, and you split your program into these callbacks. With gevent, well, you don't have that. That's, like, in my opinion, is the main reason. The other reason is that because I use event loop written in C, which to Twisted defense just weren't available when Twisted was implemented in 10 or 12 years ago. It's actually somewhat faster. And there are people, for instance, the Megal.com chat used to use Twisted, and about 5,000 concurrent users, they have this 100% of CPU used by this process. And then they rewrite it in gevent, and then now they can scale one process to 10,000. Of course, eventually they just add more processes, but this is kind of comparison from real deployment of performance. So it's can be called more performant and also easier to use. That's how I see it.
How the change to Python 3 has made any differences to you? Because there's a big process going on right now of everyone moving from Python 2 to Python 3. And there's some backwards compatibility stuff being broken and so on. So what versions do you support? And does it cause you any problems supporting different versions of Python, moving to Python 3 and so on?
Yeah, with the recent versions we support from Python 2.5 to Python 2.7, so the recent of two branch. And Python 2.3, I haven't done like any work on it myself. People made some progress contributing, but haven't seen like a pull request yet. So right now we don't support it. I gevent is like a bit of free time project for me, so I don't use Python 3 yet. So I'm waiting for someone else to contribute or for me to switch to Python 3 to work someone something should happen. But after we release 1.0 version, I would be really interested in the pull requests and patches, and maybe also doing some work on it myself. It's not a big library, so it shouldn't be too hard, but at the same time, it uses objects like sockets, SSL objects, subprocess, which change somewhat from Python 2 to Python 3. So it's not just an automatic process of fixing
syntax. Have you had requests at all? Have people asked you for Python 3 support? Do you get that kind of thing a lot, or is it not something that's come up yet?
Yeah, it comes up a lot, and so there is an issue open, and people ask for it, and I even said, well, there's no point asking, just make a pull request to patch. Yeah, but yeah, I know that it's in well demand. Yeah, that's something that should be added.
Mm. And another thing I was curious about, which is people who've heard me on Floss before talking about anything to do with Python will know I have this strange obsession with PyPy, which is Python written in Python. Have you looked at PyPy at all? And I'm assuming that would this work with PyPy? I'm assuming it wouldn't at the moment.
Yeah, I have looked at PyPy, and it's a very interesting project. And in fact, Armin Riga, the author of Greenlet module, actually works on PyPy. And the nice thing about PyPy is that it has all this stackless module built in. So it has stackless module, it has Greenlet module, it has this functionality for switching stacks. So we can at some point port Gevent to PyPy. But at this moment, they have some difficulties merging JIT, which is just-in-time compiler, which actually speed up Python program, and this stack switching capabilities. So if you use any of stack switching, like Greenlet on PyPy, it actually becomes slower than on CPython currently. So as soon as they fix that, I don't know what's on their roadmap and how hard it's to fix, but I assume they will at some point, then it will be interesting to port Gevent to PyPy because, well, Python is lagging behind in terms of interpreters and JIT and facing serious competition from JavaScript and other languages.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely exciting times for that kind of thing. So if I were to want to deploy this on a server or something to build an application, what do I need? You mentioned, you mentioned a little bit about Apache, but I think there's GUnicorn I was reading about, which is very commonly used with G events. So how does all that stuff tie together? What would I need to do to kind of get it all up and running?
Yeah, GUnicorn or UWSGI are the like containers which do the process stuff, daemonizing all these things that are not part of the Gevent framework. And most importantly, what they do is they automatically spawn a few processes. So if you have four cores, you can run Gevent in four cores, like taking advantage of all of them. How do you do that? I don't know. I think it's pretty straightforward. So you make your application, you provide an entry point to GreenUnicorn, and set some options, so configure login and run it.
Hmm. And what kind of services? Is GUnicorn the one that most people would use then? Would you use any other kind of web
service? Is used to host HTTP servers. It's for web applications. Right. So if you've written something in Django, Flask, Pyramid, whatever web framework, or even if you use WebSockets, then you use GreenUnicorn.
Oh, okay, excellent. I'm curious to know what people are doing with this. Any projects you can tell us about that you know of that are using Gevent that you think are exciting or doing cool things with it? You mentioned Spotify. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Spotify, this one project, Discuss, Pinterest, well, this Twilio, these are the companies that I know use Gevent and I'll do some closed work with it. I'm on the open source project. I've seen a cool one, Locust.io, which does a lot of testing, which nice reports and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole page on GitHub with the open source projects on top of Gevent, but mostly it's like libraries that enhance Gevent in some way. And since Gevent is more commonly used in like web applications, which are just hosted somewhere, I'm not sure if there is much source to see.
Mm. And you mentioned that it's a bit of a labor of love, if you like, a bit of a passion project for yourself. So How many people work on it? Is it? It's not a full time, professional thing for you. G Event. It's a side thing.
Yeah, right now it's not a full time professional thing. There is one other regular contributor besides me, but I still do most of the work. And well, a number of people contribute patches, but you can't call them regular contributors. But the thing about GVent, there is a small library, so it's okay to have one maintainer because it's just this coroutine core and event loop, and that's it. Unlike, say, Twisted, which provides all kinds of protocols, we don't do it because you can just use the protocols while they're written for standard library. So Redis Pi, you don't need the Redis client for GVent, you can just use the standard one. And that applies to a lot of libraries. Even in standard library, there's HTTP clients and the POP client, and they all can be used with GEvent and made asynchronous by GEvent.
Yeah, okay. And how would if people wanted to get involved and contribute and stuff, how can they do that? You've got is it a GitHub repo you've got right now, so they could pull the code?
Yeah, sure. Huh? It's a standard modern way: GitHub, issue tracker, pull requests, mailing list. Everything is available. So if you can contribute, please do. And a lot of people do, and I try to merge pull requests on time.
Excellent. We've actually got a couple of questions from the chat room, which is RIRC chat room, which is going speeding along here as we're talking. We got one from Brent11, who says, does Dennis know if GEvent works with Scrapy? Currently, we have to use Twisted. I don't know. Do you know anything about that one?
I'm not sure. I don't know if Scrapy really what it is.
No, I'd like to say I did, but I'd be lying if I did, I'm afraid. you'll have to look into that one. Also, Brent's got another question. He's keen on the questions. He's curious to know what Pinterest is using GEvent for. Pinterest is very popular right now, so what are they doing with it?
One of the developers contacted me, asked me some question about the release, said they're using it. And, I haven't contacted them since. I usually ask the companies to write a success story, but, sometimes they reply, sometimes they don't, so you have to wait on it. But they say they use it pretty heavily, and they say they think they're the largest user of GEvent. So it must be something interesting. I try to get a success story of them. I have a page where I put, how people use GEvent on the GEvent.org website.
And I'm curious, I have to ask the licensing questions and so on. What license is GEvent under?
It's a very liberal MIT license.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what made you go for that one? Was it something that you spent a long time kind of thinking about, or was it just one?
No, because I was the GEvent was inspired by Eventlet, and at some point used some code from Eventlet and was already licensed MIT. So to make something like competitive, I had to use open license. I don't really care about limiting people with GPL, and I don't care about... I wanted this to be used, and this, I think, the going with liberal license is like the way to go if you want something to be popular.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, then. So I'm curious to know how sites... You said you've got a company called sitesupport.com. How does that relate to... Kind of talk a little bit. How does that relate to GEvent? Are you working around supporting GEvent through the company, or how does that work?
We use GEvent at the company for our backend servers. GEvent is actually how I met my co-founder, because my co-founder Nicholas Piel has started sitesupport.com. He used GEvent. That's how we got in touch, and I decided to join him. So we use it ourselves. So the whatever is in the trunk, that what we have deployed.
And we always like to get kind of personal stories from developers on the show. How did you get into open source development, and how did you get specifically into developing GEvent? Is it been a long history for you with open source? I mean.
The company I worked for before making GEvent were actually full open source. So what I made was open source. And I don't know how I got really involved. But before that, even before that, I would work in the research institute in Novosibirsk. It's a Butker Nuclear Research Institute. And obviously, they use lots of open source and Linux. So, This is, if you want a network server these days, you have to go for some Linux or FreeBSD, but not for Windows, obviously.
So it's been, you've been doing this quite a while then, and I mean, it's great to hear that, you know, obviously I'm a Linux fan, so it's great to hear you, extol the virtues of Linux there. But what made you go for Python specifically as a language? Was it something about Python that attracted you, or is it, did you just kind of drift into it?
Well, I think I started as a working professionally as a C++ developer, but there are lots of opportunities where C++ is just gives you too slow development. So you want something better. And I was looking at scripting languages, and I realized that writing something in Python takes me like a few times less time than C++. So if the task doesn't require this absolute speed and close to metal performance, then using Python can save time and well and make it more fun. So I was in the earlier jobs, I was hired for the C++ work, but often I tried to replace it with Python where it was suitable. And yeah, this is what I use since, but yeah.
Excellent. Okay, then. And I was just curious what the kind of... I'm always interested in the challenges and things that you face developing projects like this, that developers face. So what do you think the biggest challenge has been in developing G-Event so far, and what are you most proud of about it?
What am I most proud of?
It's a tough one.
I don't know. I'm glad that it got so popular as it is. I didn't expect it when I published it. I just wanted to do something for myself that works, and I'm glad that it's used by. Well, I think it's one of the most popular frameworks for Python now, and it's cool that it is. I guess that's what I'm proud of. But in development challenges. I'm not quite sure from the top of my head.
So I'm sort of interested in how the community is around this. I mean, part of the thing is, like, you know, we've actually sort of been struggling for the last 20 or 30 minutes to ask interesting questions, because this is so it's such a mundane thing. I mean, you give it things to do and it does them in parallel. What's the most unusual thing about G-Event?
Most unusual thing about I can say what the most controversial thing about G-Event.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, the controversial thing, but also very useful, is monkey patching. So in Python world, you are not supposed to do monkey patching. It's okay in Ruby. I'm still on?
Yeah, you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's okay in Ruby, but in Python, it's like... And that's why the module called Monkey, because, well, it does something that is not really good. But it's so useful that, well, you may not do it, but you should. So this is kind of controversial. People always have, oh, monkey patching, I don't want to do this. And sometimes it's irrational. But if it helps you, then, well, why not do it? And in fact, because Python is so averse to monkey patching, nobody else does it. And the monkey patching gives you problem when two libraries conflict with what they patch. But because nobody else does it, it has been working out quite well.
Yeah, I think if you write a library in Ruby and you don't monkey patch, I think they laugh at you. I think that's probably part of the requirement. So, hey, and I know that some of the audience knows what monkey patching is, but why don't you describe that, since obviously you're doing it.
It's taking an object. Well, it was, at least in the terms that I do it, it's taking a class or a function in a Python standard library that all the other libraries are built upon, and replacing it with your own implementation. So this is the kind of monkey patching that I do, and I need to do it, because if I don't, for example, the socket a call will block the whole process and will not give my event loop a chance to run and schedule other processes. So I have to do it, and that's how I do it. It's very simple. It's because Python is so dynamic, you can do it easily, and it doesn't protect against it or anything.
Okay, so in essence, what it's doing is, if I can understand this properly too, and explain it a little bit also for the audience, you have a call. You normally have a call to socket, and normally or some socket read operation or whatever, and normally that would block because it has to wait for the actual connection to be made or the actual line to be read from the socket. You're going in with your code and replacing that line of code or that call to that code with a call to your code that knows how to go into the event loop. But you also have to still be able to ultimately call the socket call. So you also have to save the original somewhere and use it deeper in your code. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's true. That's correct. And in fact, well, all the originals are saved and available. So if you really need them, well, you can use them.
And in Python, you can only do this at the Python level, which is why the MySQL library can't be properly monkey patched because it's calling the actual C level socket call. Correct?
Yeah, exactly. That's the limitation. So if you have a C library, you need to run it through ChatPool.
It is one thing I like about Perl. Perl, in fact, you can monkey patch any call that can be made at the Perl level. And you're right, it's the same problem would be true at the C level, but hardly anything calls the C level stuff in Perl because the Perl level stuff is so low level that it's usually okay to just stay at that level. So we're almost out of time here. So I just want to make sure that we've covered everything that you wanted to cover about gevent. Is this hard to get my head around if I'm just starting with it? Are there tutorials available? Is there good examples of how to use this available?
There is an introduction on the website. There is a community-maintained tutorial called gevent tutorial. If you Google for it, you'll have some nice explanations. There are tutorials for specific topics written not by me, but by community, like how to do socket.io with Django, how to do WebSockets with gevent. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you Google for gevent tutorials, you'll find a few.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't think it's hard at all because the programming model it gives you is so familiar, so you don't even need that much documentation because a lot of things are just re-implementations of things from the multi-threading world.
Okay, and so what's in the future for gevent? You said you were going to rewrite it based on some other event model, event loop?
Yeah, so Node.js project has developing a new event loop. It was originally based on libv, but then they go into a bit different direction. But it has all the right features that we actually need in the event loop. And on top of that, like thread pool, process management, that's all things that gets re-implemented by every event loop. And then the PyPy project has this stack switching functionality written in C. So what I'm experimenting with right now is combining the two and implementing gevent at a sort of a C level. Then you can, of course, make a Python wrapper for it, but you maybe can make a Ruby wrapper for it, I don't know. And it will be much better performance than gevent that we have now.
Well, that'll be awesome. So are you looking for assistance in helping to develop that code? Are you looking for anybody in particular to help you with your project?
Yeah, of course. Sure. I want to first, of course, publish it on GitHub, whatever there is, and, well, announce it on the mailing list, on Twitter. So if you want to help, if you're interested, I think it's a very cool project. You watch for the Twitter for link to GitHub. I will post it at some point when it doesn't crash as much.
Very good. Very good. I don't know if this is politically correct to ask, but somebody in the chat room actually wants to know what your accent is. What's your native language?
I'm Russian. I just have been there for a few months, but I've lived in Russia for the most of my life.
Very awesome. Very awesome. Cool. Well, I hope you didn't take offense at that question, but it's like you have an accent and did this different from mine. I probably have an accent to you, so hey, it all works out. Okay. Anyway, so I want to thank you very much for being on the show today and chatting with us about gevent.
Thank you for inviting me. I was
very
glad
good.
To be there.
Very good. That was Denis Bilenko, who speaks to us from Amsterdam, talking about gevent. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, really fascinating project. I've got to be honest. When I looked at this, I thought another one? Do we need another one? Because I don't know, Twisted seems to be very popular. And then actually, when we got talking about it, and when he said that, you know, you've got Pinterest, you've got people like Spotify using it, I thought, well, they probably know more than I do about this. So chances are this really is worth having and a great project. It's still quite a young project, I would say. I mean, 2009, not that long ago. So it seems like they're doing really well. And it seems that he's very keen on changing things as well. We just talked there about changing the model behind it, the event-driven model behind it and so on. So it sounds like a very dynamic project as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like these kind of projects because it's sort of the, you know, as I sort of alluded to a bit earlier, it's sort of the mundane. This solves a problem. It solves a very interesting and important problem, but it's not sexy like, say, Apache is or something like that. But it's nice that people are like finding their niche in here and going, here's a problem that isn't being solved very well yet, but I can make a contribution to it and really contribute to a lot of other projects that are happening on top of that. And I like that. I also like to say, I had to grin a little bit that he brought up Node.js. I went, well, geez, we just interviewed those guys last week. So, there's an interesting connection already there and that also shows me a lot that doing open source, there's a lot of layering of things on top of other things that without WSGI interfaces or GUnicorn interfaces, you know, this wouldn't have as much functionality. It wouldn't be as interesting, but because we have all those other things that we can plug together, this is pretty amazing.
The glue between the different projects, definitely. And it seems as though, I mean, it's almost 2 or 3 years out of date, probably, this statement now, but it seems as though these asynchronous development models and asynchronous applications where, you're not necessarily connected all the time, you're going to be moving from place to place, they're really becoming so popular now, and everybody's excited about things like CouchDB. That's like last year's cool thing. Again, I'm out of date, probably.
But, Couchbase, not CouchDB anymore. Well, CouchDB is gone. Go. Yeah.
Sorry, that's how out of date I am. so there you go. But it seems like asynchronous programming, it seems to be where all the cool kids are right now, or what they're interested in.
Well, I mean, it's really the way to get scale, because, you know, you've got these machines and you've got two ways to scale. You can either get a whole bunch of more hardware. Like my current client here has got 50 machines in the cloud somewhere, and they're serving up, 300 transactions a second across the whole base. But inside each of those, you have to have something like, well, they've got Apache talking to a Couchbase instance to basically generate the data. And you have to figure out how to make that scale. And so you have to have this notion of cooperative processes and thinking about different things all working in together with each other and making things work. So it's the day. I mean, we're in a society where everybody can pick up their smartphone and go online with something, and we have to have some way to serve all that.
Yeah, that's true. And you've got new challenges as well. Like, obviously, you could always lose network connection, but people on cell phones, exactly, you know, they might go in a tunnel on the train, they might, you know, whatever. Your chances are your connection's going to be less stable. So you want to be able to keep the applications flowing.
Yep. And this is definitely, if I was a Python programmer, I would definitely be looking more at this. I'm not. So this actually is one of the few times I'm doing a show where I probably won't be paying much attention to the fact that we actually interviewed the guy. Sorry about that, Dennis. It's not personal. It's just that I'm not a Python programmer. I like to indent my code as I choose, not how Guido indented it. Yes. So.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Were you waiting for me to come back on that? No, I thought I'd let you have that one for now.
I was sort of waiting for a Python comeback for you, but that's okay. It's true. We don't have to have that at all.
Let the Python community down. I'm ashamed. I should go and hang my head in shame, I think.
You know, Guido's a good guy. I'm not gonna diss him, except to say that I'm probably not ever going to use Python. So there we go. Anyway, so speaking of upcoming guests, which is my awkward transition for the day. We have next week, we have Concrete CMS, which is a CMS made for marketing but built for geeks. I love that catchphrase, which is why I had to cut it and paste it into my little list here for things coming up. So, of course, content management systems, ways to build websites and web frameworks and things like that. So that should be pretty fun. I don't even know what language is written in. I guess I'll have to find out. We'll find out next week, I guess. Following that, we have Auphonic, which is an automatic audio post-production web service for broadcasters and podcasters. A bit of an unusual show, as I said a couple times ago, in that it's a service that uses all open source behind the scenes. And we're going to talk to them about how they do that and why they chose the kind of stuff they chose. But it's not itself an open source project. So a bit unusual for this show, but I figure you'll forgive me every once in a while to be able to do that. Tapper, which is a test infrastructure. Media Goblin, a media publishing platform that can basically make it so you can have your own Flickr or YouTube or whatever. So Tonic, which is an Erlang-based web framework and CMS. We had a Haskell-based framework a couple of shows ago. CakePHP, which is, as it sounds, a PHP web framework. Poodle, which is a web-based translation framework where people can cooperate on providing translations for your software. Really looking forward to the Dart language. That's the language being developed at Google that is native in Chrome but also translates down to native JavaScript for all the other browsers. Should be pretty cool. And finally, wrapping up Q1, we've got Pinto, which is a localized CPAN, which should be all great. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you can see the spreadsheet linked from there, which has all these shows and more, including the dates and times and stuff. If there's somebody that you want on the show that isn't on that list, have the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and I will add them to the list and get them probably into Q2 because I'm going to open up Q2 pretty soon here for being able to book them. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. I post there every time I add a new guest or just before the shows actually air. I also post to Floss Weekly on both Twitter and Identica for immediate notices and stuff. We have a live chat room, as you saw. We had a couple of actual questions, opposed to theoretical questions. Yeah, a couple of actual questions today from the chat room. We're on live.twit.tv at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays is our typical taping time. You can follow me personally at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. You can also follow me on Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. And just as a personal note, I have been continuing to succeed at my weight loss. I'm down about 35 pounds from when I started. You might see me a little bit thinner if you're looking at the video. That's not a special effect on the camera. That is actually just me being thinner. So all very awesome. Dan, where can we find out more about you?
Yeah, well, danlynch.org, as it says on the I'm trying to put my finger right there on the video for everyone watching the video. Yeah, it's the place to go. That's my blog. But as many people will know, I co-host a show called Linux Outlaws, which is a weekly show about open source, obviously Linux, as it says in the name, but obviously other things as well, like Android and, you know, all kinds of open source goodness. But we're actually closing in on our 300th episode. It's five and a half years we've been doing the show now, which is scary when I think about it. So wow. For our 300th episode, we thought we should do something special. So we're actually doing a live show, a live event that people can come to, which we've wonderfully called Linux Outlaws Live, mainly so we can have the acronym LOL as our acronym. So yeah, LOL, Linux Outlaws Live, works quite well. Yeah, so it's going to be in Liverpool in the UK. Apologies to people who, you know, can't make it, but hopefully some of you will be within traveling distance. It's on February the 17th in Liverpool, and it's a place called Leaf on Bold Street, which is a cafe stroke venue, a bar as well. And tickets are £5, and the proceeds, all the proceeds are going to go to the Software Freedom Conservancy, who are doing great work supporting free software projects and stuff, and keeping all the thing, the wheels turning. Free software projects. In the meantime, as I say, if you go to danlynch.org, you can find all of my Twitter, G+, all those kind of things in the sidebar on there, so I won't list them all out for you now. Yeah, come along if you can to Linux Outlaws Live, if you're within range, and if you're not, check out the show. If you do a quick search for Linux Outlaws, we'll pop up.
Yeah, wait, £5? You guys aren't on the euro yet?
Not yet. We're holding out. we're holding out.
The only member of the EU that's not on the euro. I love that. That's London.
No, we're not the only one. We're not the only one. To be fair, there's something like we won't get too geeky about it, but there's 27 nations and only 17 of them are in the euro. So there's another 10 that, apart from us. I don't know who they are, but there's another 10 apart from us.
Yeah, because I remember that. I remember having a big pile of euros that I took with me that I got like the previous time I went to Europe, and then I took them again, and then I was in like Israel, and I went, oh wait, they don't take euros. What the hell am I doing with these euros? So pretty sad. That's okay. I made it anyway. They take dollars. They take dollars. It's fine.
I was going to say, don't they take the dollar? Most places seem to take the dollar.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere I go on a cruise ship takes dollars. It's really nice because it's sort of like the universal currency for me. So we're pretty cool with that. Yeah, and I also want to put a big shout out for you on Linux Outlaws. Frequently I get the request to have Floss Weekly have more current news and stuff, and I don't have the research time that you and Fab have to put into a news show. And so I'm really glad that you guys have your show out there to have the weekly stuff. And your show's like almost 2 hours now, isn't it? I mean, it seems to get longer and longer, right?
Yeah, it's like, what's that one? Is it Boyle's Law? That gas bellows expand to fill any any void. We seem to just expand all the time. Apologies to physicists and there. That's terrible. Terrible use of Boyle's Law, probably. But yeah, it's almost up to 2 hours now. So yeah, we're getting there. We're not always that on the nail because we have a kind of a week between shows. So sometimes there'll be a story that's a week old and people write in and go, oh, this isn't news. It's a week old, but... You know, a week's a long time on the internet, I suppose.
I suppose, yeah, especially with so much stuff happening in open source these days. So I'm really glad, like I said, I'm really glad that Linux Outlaws is out there. It's one of the few other shows on open source that I actually continue to listen to because it's informative for me to be able to keep up with what else is happening in the open source world. So, Dan, I want to thank you again for coming in, apparently at the last minute, thanks to your email situation. But thanks for co-hosting the show today.
No problem, and thanks for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
Very good, very good. Well, as we say again, every time this about... how about if I actually use English? As we say just about every time at the end of the show like this, we'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.